Welcome, everyone, to Paradigm Shifters. We have a wonderful couple, a married couple from Down Under, who have explored, experimented, and become very, very, I would say, consciously spiritual and are working all over the world to help all of us get more enlightened, more wise. And I have here Jaylee and Paul Balch, which we did have on the show some years back, maybe 6 or 8 years ago, right?
Right.
So I'm so glad to have you on again. And now you've got this amazing book. I know you do various kinds. I want to call it yoga, but we discussed the fact that it's kind of an inner yoga. It isn't necessarily an active physical motion, but you're pretty adept at helping people understand how they block the flow of their own energy and how they can work with energy in the world to become compatible with all life, right?
We it was quite a few years ago when we brought in some of the Tibetan teachings that we have been privileged to learn through a Tibetan master lama. And our basic approach with yoga, Veronica, was not just a physical body, it was a fourfold body. So using the practice of yoga, we introduced the teachings a good decade or more ago about the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual body and how they can be applied and the contemplation of those four while doing the physical yoga. So it was to move the Western mind and philosophy away from just doing yoga to be skinny and sweat, you know, it was to bring in the other aspects.
So, but I guess also I want to further understand it in another way, which is when you're speaking about it or when I'm going through your book, I'm so conscious of the beingness that we are, being in harmony with all of its energy bodies and being able to radiate and interact with the energy of animals and trees and flowers and oceans. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. I work extensively with the nature kingdom myself. That's why I have all the orchards and everything that I have. And Paul works with the healing and energetic body. So the harmony part of nature and the cosmos and following that divine inner voice is probably the focal point of what we're about. It's that intuition or that wisdom that comes from within, regardless of what is taking place without.
First of all, before we go, that's very fascinating, actually, but before we go far into that, tell everybody who you are and what are you doing together?
Well, we are on a journey of our own realization. And we've been involved with this process for 35 plus years. We were very blessed to meet each other about 15 years ago. We were working with two different streams or directions of spiritual development. And we met in South Africa in 2004. And immediately we had an amazing connection, just not on the physical level, but we had a connection on all levels. And we both recognized and felt that. And from that point, we couldn't really stay apart. And
was it like so this? There you are.
Yes, immediately.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Okay, sorry to interrupt you.
And so from that process onwards, we worked on synergizing and taking our own spiritual practices and knowledge to a whole new level and combining them to start sharing that with the world. So we feel there's a responsibility to empower people, help people to become more conscious. And one of the processes we decided to go into was yoga, especially in the Western world, because people have made it more so about their physical body. And really, anything that we do, the idea is to bring in consciousness, to be more aware of what's going on the subtle levels. A part of that is to be able to step out of our normal everyday mind so we can have that intuition and be more in touch with our true self. The practice of physical yoga can help facilitate that, but if you're not aware of those potentials, then you're purely focused on the physical body. And you do have benefits, but the more conscious you are and the more understanding you have, not only the greater healing that you can take place, but you can develop and grow and expand at a faster rate.
And it never stops, does it, the expansion, the consciousness evolution, does it? I'm very fascinated by that. You're even teaching a class on this whilst you're here in Bellingham, right?
Yes. The bringing the mind and body together in one place is to become present. And then the idea is to let go of the mind and body. So then you can allow that consciousness to move through. That helps to balance your energies and helps to expand your awareness. And it is a process that we walk people through in the workshop. And
is it like a trance? Is it sort of like going into a trance or a...
Although we have a very strong experience and background through clinical hypnotherapy, we're both instructors in that field, you're going into an altered state. Whenever you are focused with your concentration and you're not in your normal thinking mind, you're in an altered state. And once you go into an altered state, magic can happen, amazing things can take place, because you step beyond the normal program and the normal process of thinking.
Right, which is a wonderful place to go, huh?
Wow, it feels great to be in that state.
Yeah. So, and how long do you think it takes people to get there, to get into and integrate it? I mean, what you're saying is you're integrating your emphasis on all the bodies, all the energy bodies, would you say?
Yeah.
Physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, vibrational.
Can take a moment or can take a lifetime. Comes down to choice, right? Choice is a superpower. And obviously that what backs that up is understanding. So the consciousness can't go beyond its own understanding. So when new understanding comes in, the personal consciousness then seeks to grow further and expand its boundaries. So all evolution literally counts upon the grace of other understanding, other people of higher or other entities of higher frequencies bringing in understanding that our own consciousness hadn't thought of or hadn't accepted up until that moment.
But we just keep expanding to let it in. But there's an integration process, right?
Right. You have to, it's like all food, right? It doesn't matter which body digests what, even spiritual food has to be digested at some level.
So tell us about one of the things I was reading about. First of all, you talked about five different bodies, is that right? Five different consciousnesses.
Four.
Wait a sec.
Four.
Mental, physical,
Four.
Emotional.
Yes, our approach is a very dynamic one. The way we approach the fourfold human is, and I always show this movement with my four fingers, it's like the four bodies are always doing this, they're always moving in and out. And so while on one day we may feel physically strong, we may feel emotionally not, or we may feel mentally not, you know, we're always moving like this. So if we allow ourselves to be dynamic and to understand and accept that we're always moving at some level, then we can be a lot less critical about ourselves and understand that we do have a bad hair day. There are days when our thoughts are all over the place. They will affect the emotions and ultimately actually affect the physical body. So it's to bring that conscious awareness that you are fourfold, watch all four, and you'll see how every day you can never ever be the same person because they are always moving.
Do you think humanity is a relational species?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I guess I was listening to a lot of Buddhist talks from a fellow named Robert Thurman, and it was very wonderful, but he's saying that basically we are relational. And I kind of like, well, that isn't such a huge surprise, but talking about our identity, which is always fascinating to me, that we are so impacted by one another and our reactions that we're relational.
From that point of view, absolutely. And a couple of the workshops and the teachings that we use, we probably use it more along the lines of the mirrors of self-reflection. So everybody in our environment is just this holographic or this mirror that mirrors either what we have inside that we need to accept or what we deny ourselves that they have. And in that, you know, we probably find the whole tension of why we are angry with another is because we see in them what we which we don't believe we have within ourselves, and vice versa. So from that context, we use the term mirrors of self-reflection. Yes.
Oh, I like that, actually. So talk about identity then. Like, what is identity? It's also a state of constant motion, is it not?
You want
to? Well, from our perspective, you have the personality, which is the construct that helps you to interface and operate in everyday life. And then you have your true core spiritual identity, which is something else. And that's something that people need to learn to explore and discover by willing to not be so invested in the personality and having to fit in and be accepted and belong in the outside world, which is where most people are at. That's their drive. So there again, when people have understanding, if we look at life, if we look at yoga, when people have an understanding of what's beyond or what's the next level, then they can be excited and inspired and to have some sort of understanding that there is more, and they can then choose to explore that or not. One of the first things regarding stepping onto the path of enlightenment is there's got to be more to life than what I can see with my physical eyes.
Right.
That's the first question that people have, and that's the first step on the path of enlightenment. Then the next thing is, well, what can I do about it? Where can I learn? Where can I receive knowledge and understanding to explore that potential? And so we see it, this is a part of our journey, and our purpose is to bring in those potentials and to release the knowledge to help people realize there is so much more, not only to life, but to themselves. And
well, I'm fascinated by you talking about that we have our own, our personality, and but you also spoke of we have a higher cellular personality. Is that what you said? Are those not the words exactly? But I'm very interested in that and how a person who's a neophyte or just coming into it understands that. You know, so you think that we do have our own personality as a soul, which goes on forever, right?
Yes, for sure. And the whole purpose of self-realization is to integrate that, if you would like to call it soul personality or higher self or core identity, the many different labels have been given to that part of ourselves, is to have that realization and allow it to be integrated in our everyday life. To do that, we've got to step out of our personality and thinking mind. That's part of the challenge. And yoga allows people
to do that. That's a huge challenge.
Yoga allows people to do that if they have the understanding and they apply that in their practice, because when you are working your physical body and you're maintaining the stillness and the expression of the pose, it helps you to let go of the mind. That's the whole process. And then you open up to that higher self and allow that.
So the meditation is the movement sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like a moving meditation. But then adding to that the shavasana, going into altered states. You see, by going through a yoga practice, you move all this energy and you bring in awareness. You can be in an altered state by the time you finish your practice. Then what do you do with it? All the energy is available and you're in an altered state. Where do you direct that energy? What do you create? What do you focus on? And for a lot of physical-based yoga practices, they don't utilize that at the end. People finish the class and go home, but they're in an amazing state with all this energy that they've freed up, and they can use that in the
future. So what do you think they should do? What do you plan to teach at that point?
Well, to teach people in that place, they're empowered to heal, or they're empowered to become more conscious, they're empowered to create more effectively what they want in life. So it's like a valuable window where they have this alignment, this harmony, this balance, and the energy available to change their lives. And that's really what it's about, for us anyway.
And you both had sight, or you both had intuitive information coming in when you were quite young, right?
Yeah, that's been part of a legacy, I guess, ancestral, genetic as well, you know, the Celtic genes and grandmothers and them that are pretty far-seeing and prophetic dreams. And so, yeah, there's been a lot of that in the history of certainly my lineages.
And acceptance of it, right?
But however, in obviously as the neophyte progresses, becomes an adept and moves on, you do go beyond all of that. You do move beyond all psychic awareness to something more, right? Mm-hmm. It is one of the things that people sort of get stuck on, being psychic, because it feels wonderful to be not so trapped by the physical and to have thoughts that are from the invisible. But eventually you actually can pass that. Yeah, for sure.
To go where?
I didn't hear you, hon.
I said to go where, and then I smiled because it's not a trick question. I just wanted you to talk about it.
It's not even to go anywhere, because that in reality isn't the truth. It is a place of being there. But it's like I intimated a little bit earlier that to be there needs the influence of consciousnesses that are already there to pass understanding, because the evolution of the consciousness can't take place unless you know where you're being, right? You have no idea what a different, a higher, a more expanded divine consciousness even feels like, seems like, unless the correct opening is afforded or given to you so that you can make a choice to go for it or not. But it's like all things, whenever we choose a higher consciousness, we go through what we call the deaths, right? We die to the little self. And the dying to the little self is, you know, often not a very nice process. So people shy away from it and choose not to. They choose to rather stay where they're at in the known, because very much it's a path of going into the unknown. And, you know, we're governed and as a mass consciousness, we're taught to stay as far away from the unknown as possible. That's why the props we've created here are so that we can feel grounded and comfortable and safe and secure, right?
Sure.
And it's not like going into the unknown or being at a different frequency means you're going to be unsafe. It just has a different parameter. And the little self, you know, you're speaking and asking a question about the identity and the personality of the soul. And the immediate image that came through to my mind that may help is that here on Earth, we have a personality identity, which is part of the conscious mind, and the ego sort of is the butler, the governor that runs it. And we have all these different identities and facets of ourselves. So with different people, we are different people. And we are different with our partners to what we are with our kids and co-workers, right? So we have these faces.
We have
the nurturer, the destroyer, the warrior. We have all of those. So while we're still a consciousness that's pretty much earthbound, we are played by those faces, you know. And a lot of times people don't have control whether they go into the nurturer or the destroyer. They just are puppets doing that. So when we start to move our consciousness to a more truer sense of self, we start to come in contact with the soul essence and the higher part of who we are. Now that part of us has a character and has a makeup of its own, but it's not based upon the mirrors and the facets of this life. It's based upon a collection of all lives. So that's a whole different entity altogether once you make contact with that. And when you do, the little one with the mirrors and the identities then simply become a part of something way bigger.
Let me ask you this. You said you have to have these other, you have to be able to reach for other consciousnesses or recognize other consciousnesses, or is that right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And so
for an expansion. For instance, if I had to like say to you, here on Earth, there is a dookie dookie that's available to be seen. The brain straight away goes into, okay, let me have a look at past history, everything I know, what is the dookie dookie, finds out it doesn't know what it is. So it's something unknown and new. Then the brain starts to go, hang on, I need to find out about this. And so consciousness is then directed towards this thing that it's now learnt about, and it starts to open up. One is discovered, it's given a genetic name, its color, whatever, and it's discovered to be some little creature in the Himalayan mountains. But until it's introduced to the consciousness, it's an unknown. So it stands to reason that higher consciousnesses need to be introduced to the current consciousness before, you know, it can even be directed there.
Before you can settle into any.
Before you can even be anywhere, right? So
yeah.
We are constantly understanding that we have to be in a humble place to receive.
And allow.
And allow new things to open our consciousness. So there are teachers, there are influences, and that is grace, right? Otherwise, evolution would stop.
That's really interesting. I was fascinated as you spoke that it's really a matter of the being in a state of expansion, or a being is some new feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not even a feeling. It's a vibration of such expansion that you just can't stop it. It's an unstoppable feeling. You know, you can't contain it at all.
But Jaylee, if you don't know that about consciousness, I'm assuming some people don't know that there are these, greater intelligences around you. How do you just adjust to that? Do people stumble over that?
Well, I would like to think that, you know, there is a benevolence throughout the universe. I know that to be true. So, in particular, and this is also grace, if a person is not introduced to it, a person doesn't come across it, I'd say that, A, they're not ready, they haven't designed it that way, their focus conscious is on learning something else of a more earthly matter. Maybe they're learning about tyranny and victimhood, maybe they're learning about the love of a mother, rather than an expanded consciousness. But everyone's getting something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone is on the upward momentum, or what we call the expanded momentum spiritually. Some people are exploring in an expanded way the emotional body. Some exploring the mental body. You know, everyone's exploring one of the layers of self in this lifetime. There's no good or bad.
So who comes to you, people? Who do you work with particularly?
Well, we have a core group who's been working with us for almost 20 years. So we have those.
Oh, wow.
But then we've got people that have then come in to work with us all the way down to the last year. So we find people that have done some sort of internal conscious work, like to gravitate towards us. There are people that have had teachers before, read a lot of books, and they find they've gotten to a place where they can't go any further. So they come and somehow are led in consciousness to us. But we still take new people in. But we have a range of about 40 different online and face-to-face seminars and workshops as well. So each one progressively, you know, helps people. We've just done 3 times. I've got a 7-week online illumination workshop. So it was the program everyone had to do regarding the human mind and the brain and stepping out of that holographic construct. And they're now going to a massive retreat with us. So we've got quite a group from 8 different countries that are attending this one in September. So we're pretty excited.
Oh, wow. That's great. How many people will come?
To this one, we invited, I think, 25 people. Yeah, we're invited to this one. Attendees that have done a lot of work. So we break them up into where people are at. And it's got nothing to do with disrespect or anything. It's just we're conscious that the human nervous system, because we've been through it, has to be prepared for each layer of consciousness that's opened up towards them, right? Otherwise, you have people freaking out and fear and everything, and that's the last thing we want, right?
So how do you prepare them? You soothe them, or is just the yoga exercises and food and what? much more complicated.
Yeah, no, we prepare people by taking them through a series of experiences, expanding their consciousness, helping them with knowledge and understanding of who they are and how they relate to what's happening in their life and in their world. So use yoga as one entry point, but we use other entry points as well. So the yoga process, we stepped into the yoga world to make a difference and to bring in higher knowledge, because we feel that a lot of people going into yoga were looking for more, but they weren't finding it. So we brought some of our knowledge into the yoga world, and we put together several workshops to help empower and to help them to expand their awareness within the yoga.
And you use the hypnotherapy for that too?
Yes, when we work with people one-on-one, and we do run some self-hypnosis programs, but it's not just the standard hypnotic process. We teach people more about the esoteric side, so there's a lot more you can do once you go into an altered state. And it's what you do in the altered state that makes the difference, and that's where most of the work happens. So when you are working with people, you're having to get bypass their critical mind so that they can look deeper and connect with a deeper part of themselves to make the real changes or sustainable changes in their life. And going into an altered state allows the people to get access to those parts of themselves where they can make those changes.
Right.
So we take people through all these different steps.
So it's quite a challenge for some people, huh? And I was also wondering, as I was looking at the chakra description, you have a number of, like, each chakra having different levels. And do you actually escort people through, teach them how to go through the various levels of the chakras, which to me are just like energy, their energy guides to how we handle energy, to use them that way to help them advance?
We do give an understanding of what the chakras relate to energetically, and we do take people through a process in an altered state, a meditative process where they can start to activate and connect. We also teach them how that they can balance and activate the chakras even more. And then we also hint that there are different levels within the chakras. And
that's fascinating, that part. Mm-hmm.
It's a process through which, so how secure do you feel with your level of security in the physical everyday life? That would be the first level of the Kundalini energy. It's all about security. So we hint at some of those things, and then we leave it up to the people to explore if they want to. You know, that's if there's seven chakras by seven, that's 49. But there's actually 12 chakras, so there's 144 different levels of vibrational frequency to work with. And, you know, you could specialize just in that one area. So we give people, we initiate people, and we give them enough understanding and direction where then they can go and explore on their own. And you can find out where you've got a blockage in a chakra and where you need to work through various processes as well. So that's more a part of, we touch on that in the yoga, some of the yoga workshops, and also the esoteric healing programs that we've run over the years.
Interesting. I was just thinking about back to identity and back to going into a bigger freedom from earth plane identity, right?
Right.
And then thinking about the chakras, I go, well, maybe that's some kind of a guide for people. We're talking about needing consciousness. You need some kind of connection, right? Is that kind of...
Yeah. So there are four chakras above the head, and there is a specific one that relates to your future self and your real self. There's one that does relate to your soul. There's one that relates to your higher self.
So, and these are all above the head.
Yes. So they're again, okay. And they're outside the physical body. So once people have an understanding that they're there and what they relate to vibrationally, then they can go into a meditative state, bring their awareness to that point, and start to strengthen their connection on those different levels.
Now, so strengthening their connection means they can then use it for further consciousness or... just self-awareness or all of the above?
One relates to more possibilities in life. So you start to expand your potential. You start to open up other doorways to other experiences and potentials in life as you start to explore those other chakras and levels of consciousness. What's important, though, that I'd like to state, a lot of people are trying to get from point A to point B, and that's a very linear way of thinking. Mm-hmm. As Jaylee was touching on, you know, you have a personality on an earth level, and with the everyday mind, we're trying to get from point A to point B. We're trying to get to that higher state of consciousness. Whereas as we do the work to let go of that level of thinking, we open up in the present moment to allow the new consciousness to come in that is the higher.
Oh, good. Yeah, so it isn't like step by step in a certain way.
So it's something that we allow and receive when we're in the right state. It's not something that we do to get there. And this is the difference between, there are many people out there that are motivated and they're trying to do so much, but the process they're going through isn't going to get them anywhere because there's nowhere to go. It's a state of consciousness that you open up and allow. You allow the higher self, the new identity, you allow it to come in, and then you've shifted into that new frequency. You haven't gone anywhere, just your consciousness has shifted and expanded.
And you're different.
Yes, definitely. And then your world, right? Your mirrors are different. Everything changes. But you haven't gone anywhere. You've just recreated or reshifted reality because your frequency changed.
But do you even have mirrors then?
Yes, it's just different then. It changes its nature. So instead of having a mirror having a reactive nature, we react to our mirrors. It becomes, you become a mirror that then brings change for other people.
Okay.
It changes.
So for most people, their mirrors are determining, their reflections are determining how they feel, what they think, and who they are in life. And then the next stage is you learn to read your mirrors. And that's a reflection of showing you where you're at and what you're working on. And then once you move beyond that level of understanding, and then you can be a mirror for the world to reflect what whoever's in front of you, what they need to look at so that they can shift and grow as well.
Ah, that makes a lot of sense. So as you moves through, you change a lot of, you know, it works through great groups of people, doesn't it? Is that right?
You're right. But your whole world...
It's politics. It's politics, isn't it? Politics is heart. So talk about love. It's a funny thing to say, but...
Well, love, that's a very interesting one. We're about to run a workshop there in Bellingham called The Sacred Book of Parenting, and I think we're certainly going to approach love at that one from a parental point of view. I like to be really humorous and have a lot of fun with sort of the parenting ones because of how serious parents are about bringing their kids up to be so perfect and unblemished. And I always like to think that rearing a child is like baking a cake, but you know those cakes you put in a tin in the oven and they absolutely spill over?
Yeah.
That is raising a child. Now, you want the perfect cake that looks like the perfect sponge, but they spill over. And a lot of parents then, still hell-bent on having the perfect child, cut the cake, you know, to try and pretend that it's a perfect cake. And it's...
That's a good image, always, actually, cut the cake. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know how they trim it, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Because when we put the icing on to make it look perfect, there can't be anything... Whereas, yeah, it's not really like that. Parenting is leave the cake the way it bakes and it's perfect the way it is, you know.
But that's pretty difficult unless the person has become, you talk about mirrors, become free of those.
Well,
even then, I wonder.
So the parenting one is an introduction one into understanding the phase that the kids are in, what they're exploring, and how you as a parent can sort of really bring about the best environment your consciousness can bring so that they grow up really organically and naturally to the best of the parents' ability.
Go ahead.
It's interesting from a perspective that the older generations that are bringing up the children grew up in a world and they have a map of life in the world that is pretty much almost redundant now because the world has changed so quickly.
Right.
They're trying to raise children with a paradigm in their mind that relates to how they grew up and what they went through. And that's not applicable to the children that are coming in with a totally different level of consciousness now.
And I know.
Quite often the kids have got more to teach the parents than the other way around, and it's the parents that need to learn.
But that's pretty tricky, isn't it? Because you have this thing called duty, you know, and you're trying to do what you think is the right thing. So a lot of this other work that you're talking about, which is shifting that inner personality to, you know, to allow in the cellular personality and all that sort of thing. I go, when it comes to children, you must be going through that as they go through their growing. So there's a whole lot of tangled potential with mirrors and...
Absolutely beautiful potential. Like in November, I run a program called The Space Between Mothers and Daughters with a very good, with one of our teachers in Sydney. And mothers and daughters, because although we're helping the adolescent daughters understand where they're at, 99% of the mothers have an adolescent that's stuck there too. So while they go through the program with their daughters and connect, they're learning about their own inner adolescents that went through its own trauma that caused them to have the life they've had as an adult. So we're not only helping the kids to understand where they're at, we're helping the mothers to free where they're at, you know, and heal.
But isn't it tricky, you know, mothers and daughters are kind of a famous little group these days, but isn't it tricky because there's an awful lot of Velcro in that combination, you know, there's a lot of attachments to what people expect. So there's a lot of angry daughters with their mothers and vice versa, you know.
What I've experienced over the many years working with people is parents quite often tend to project onto their children, and by projecting what they want their children to become or what they want their children to do that the parents didn't get the opportunity to have, they're not respecting, you know, the own individual right of the child that's growing up and wanting to explore and live life the way that they want, having an understanding how the world works. And so when you project onto your children, you're not really respecting their free will. And that's where a lot
true.
If your child turns out perfectly, the parents can feel, well, we did a
validated.
Great, we were validated, we did a great job, look at what we created. And
But in essence, it might have been a rather harmonious child instead, right?
Yeah. And the whole idea is to teach the younger people that they have a creative ability to create their own life and the sources within them. And as they start to mature, they learn to rely upon their own resources instead of, it's almost encouraged to rely upon the parents nowadays, older and older and older. So a lot of young adults are still living at home because they haven't been developed to learn how to create for themselves, and it makes them dependent.
That's really interesting, isn't it? And there's a lot of kids out on the street because they've just left home way too young too. You know, there's a lot of dissatisfaction on the, at least here in America, on the family of origin kind of routine. You have children, don't you, Jaylee?
Yes, I do. I have a son and a daughter, both in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm. And do you have children, Paul?
No, I don't have children, but obviously I've experienced being a step-parent.
He's helped mine grow up.
You see, from a spiritual perspective, between the age of 14 and 21, a young person has the right to disconnect from the family and then want to choose to explore their own path.
This is spiritually speaking.
Spiritually speaking.
Right.
There's an energetic connection between the parent and the child, like an umbilical cord from an energetic point of view. That needs to be cut at the latest by the age of 21 so that they can print themselves and have the ability to rely upon themselves and create their own life. And if you continue parenting them after that, you're doing yourself and them a disservice. But the child has the right to cut that cord between 14 and 21 spiritually. So that's why
Now, what does that mean spiritually? So if you cut the cord, you're actually letting them go as free as possible?
The idea is you can be a support, you can be someone who's a friend to guide them, but you're not to parent them. They're making the choice on a soul level to explore living life the way that they prefer and choose. If the projections are too strong on the kids when they're young, that's when they'll run away from home because they feel too imprisoned and restricted and limited by the paradigm that's being placed upon them. So they'll run away. And that's what we're finding with some people.
I'll give you an example, Veronica, because this is a slippery slope and very muddy, this area.
It's a very huge subject.
Yeah, and not only that, there's a lot of sort of extreme examples which people draw upon to argue both sides. But if I give you an example that by the age of adolescence, let's say 12 to 14, a child theoretically, spiritually has received everything that they need, that they have already designed to create their life with from mom and dad. So mom and dad have been awesome role models up until that point. But then hormones start to rush in and flood the body and move up the chakra. Now, for most Western kids especially, but really across the board, when the energy moves in up through the chakras, it stops at the third one, which is in the solar plexus. So basically what it means is that they have access and they're trying now to find safety and security, which is the bottom one. They have this microscopic, small, egoic sense of self, and they know what tyranny and victimhood is. So the bullies and everything in the schoolyard are part of that. The bottom one also, and the first two, you know, sort of engage sexuality as well. So most of our Western kids know how to bring in the energy up until that point and doesn't go any further, doesn't go any higher. Very few kids in the world are taught to bring it all the way up to the space of love. It takes some pretty amazing parents to get the kids to, you know, move the energy higher than that. So they're left with dealing with the small sense of I, sexuality, victimhood, tyranny, you know, dog eat dog, I've got to try get ahead, and finding a power base where they feel safe and secure. Now, from adolescence, when we have this disconnect with mom and dad, the third aspect we have to start bringing in is we start to look at peers and our environment, because now we've gotten everything that we need from mom and dad, how to operate our world, how to create our world, and how to be. Now I start to look to peers to now sort of expand mom and them's beliefs and ideas so that I have a worldly view and a little bit more of an expanded view of life, not just mom and dad's, which is very, you know, small. So sure. Rebellion predictable starts to come in, especially when the parents are saying, no, keep to only ours. You may not have other beliefs. You may not bring in other things. And the kids are going, no, we need to bring in peers and a worldly view, because one day we have to leave your home where this worked and we have to go into an expanded world, and we need to know how to do that. We need other mirrors that help us negotiate life. So that's why there's a lot of rebellion in adolescence, because mom and them have got to loosen up a little bit and understand there's going to come a point where they're not going to totally go 100% with mom and dad's beliefs. They may only believe in 50%. And 50% has to be their own organic receiving, so that they can, you know, negotiate the world one day away from mom and dad. And it's that's causing a lot of the
conflict
in the families. Mom and dad need to realize that they've done enough. The kids have gotten exactly what they needed from them, but they do need to open up, expand, and bring other thoughts in as well, which may not fit into the cake tin nice and neatly. I mean, we've heard so many stories how mom and dad are Christians and suddenly the child wants to become a Rastafarian.
I love it.
That's just part of it, right? It's that freedom of, I'm not going to take on a belief. I know it's an opposition to you, but I need to trial and error because I'm the one who's going to drive my life one day.
Yeah, and it's also being who you are. You have to try a lot of things to figure out exactly what suits you.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a really interesting. So what about if the child is really messed up and somebody comes in to help that person in their 12 or 14 years old?
So can you first just describe to me what messed up the context of?
Okay, so I know some kids who come from very abusive households where parents are drunks or whatever, you know, something like that. So then the idea that 14, they've been taught everything. I'm like, well, some of them have been pretty distorted by then, and I feel like. I guess I want to question, how do we help them? How do we heal them?
What's important to understand is the paradigm of where they're coming from. What are their beliefs? what do they understand at that point? Because that will determine where you can start working with the child. Mm-hmm. If they're very involved with the past experiences and the past hurts, then you need to go through a process to take them back through those past experiences with different processes to help them to release the emotional...
Unravel.
Mm-hmm. Unravel and release the emotional charge and forgive what happened, to forgive themselves, why they attracted and created that, so that then they can move forward. And forgiveness is a big part of that process. But they've got to, first of all, heal and let go of the hurt, then get to a point where they can forgive. And they're doing it so they can move forward in their life, so that they can create a better life for themselves. And it is a process and a journey that they can go through, they need to go through. And it depends on their belief structure and how much. So some people will use the past as an excuse. Some people are willing to let go of their past. So you've got to guide them into getting to the point where they're willing to let go.
Well, sometimes you don't have any access. You can't really speak with them very much. You know, some are raged. I've known a lot of kids that are, that's what I called messed up. But you know they're hurt and they're like, and it'd be nice to say they're free enough to discover who they are, but some of them have to take a pretty rocky tour in order to find their way. I have watched that.
I think another thing that's very important is the teenagers need to be respected and given a voice, whereas the parents, you know, even children, are that given a voice in what do they want, how do they relate, or how do they see what's going on as well. And a lot of adults tend to talk down to the children, so they create a lot of self-esteem, self-image issues just through that process, let alone abusive families, which compounds a lot of shame and depression. And if you go through a lot of abuse when you were younger, whether it's emotional, physical, mental abuse, it actually short circuits parts of the brain circuitry, and it puts off kilter some of the chemical processes in the brain as well.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of specific healing processes that young people can go through, but it's an intense process and takes a bit of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to have access to them, because sometimes they are totally unavailable for that, you know.
And they've designed it that way, Veronica. You know, no matter what, it's always, let's give them their due, and they've designed it that way, as strange as what it sounds. Why are there some kids that are accessible and able to shift out of it, and why some are not? What happens if that is actually part of the design? It's that they're not ready to make that choice to mm-hmm. let go, right?
So what you're talking about is respecting that they have their own design.
And that it is that deep respect, because the minute their consciousness seeks freedom, seeks to move out of it, they will draw to them the person that helps them do it. The minute they're ready. The design is so perfect. The minute someone's ready, someone, grace, will bring the right person to them. But if they're not ready...
I believe that.
And you know what also? Sometimes the right person comes along and they go, I don't want you. And they reject that person. I'm not interested. I'd rather follow this line a bit longer, be a victim, play this life out, pretty crippled and, in your words, messed up, because I'm learning something from it, right?
Mm-hmm. Helps. Maybe developing it. Compassion.
It may seem challenging for some people in the circumstances that they're in, mm-hmm. but when there's physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual pain that someone's going through, when people are going through those experiences, if they won't let go of the pain, and then they're getting a payoff, they're getting some sort of reward by holding on to it, they're using it as a tool to blame or manipulation or control or whatever it may be.
Sure.
And the idea is, when they can have that understanding and have that realization, then they can forgive and give up. But they've got to realize, everybody's got to realize, the state that they're in the present moment is giving them benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, or whether it's what they want or not, they're getting some sort of benefit being in the place they are in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And then to make a shift or a change, they've got to believe the benefits that are going to come in are better than the benefits they're getting where they are right now.
And that requires a whole letting go, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
Letting go and understanding and realizing, you know, you focus on a future as well that is of more benefit that is happier, healthier, freer than the place you're in, but you've got to give up the benefits that you're getting from the place you're in and realize the benefits of the new place is even better.
And yeah, that's very important. Yeah, that's good. Thank you for that. What do you think about media? Young kids or even adults, media and heightened technology awareness and games and violence and all that?
There's always a duality. It can be used in a positive way or it can be used in a negative way. So in one way, the interconnectedness through the internet helps you to reach a lot of people and to learn a lot from other people.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, and you can be educated and learn a lot of things, but there is a lot of influence through media and technology that is also detrimental for young people as well. So it's almost like a catch-22.
Yeah. Well, it's actually back to choice, isn't it? Right?
Yeah. How are you going to use the technology? There's all sorts of things. People are talking about the frequencies of technologies and how they impact our brain, especially young people. It can affect, obviously, the brain. And then from the perspective of what you're being exposed to is influencing how you think and feel about life and yourself. There's bullying and all these sorts of things that, you know, when we were growing up, we didn't have the technology, so we weren't exposed to that through cyberspace. It's a different world we're living in now.
Very.
And so in many ways, it's a minefield that these young people have to explore and navigate their way through, and there's a lot more for them to process by being exposed to all of that.
A huge amount, yeah. I think it's quite a remarkable time. I often think that with all the technology, with the internet and so on, it's like training wheels for people to be massively empathetic and intuitive in a way. You know, we can connect without plugging things in after a while, maybe.
Yeah,
that's kind of a fun thing.
Like sort of rudimentary caveman sort of beginnings to mass telepathy and communication.
Yeah. But it's probably the better side because the oneness it's easier to empathize with other people when you see how many are this way and that, you know.
It's almost like a bridge because to get people from America to telepathically connect with people in Australia, that's a pretty big ask that may take a million years. But when you build this artificial bridge called technology and communication, it's so easy. We are doing it right now. I don't have to spend a million years to try and reach you and have a conversation with you. So I think it's a temporary bridge that one day it'll become redundant and may not even be needed.
I think that's true. I think it's developing that connection that's really exciting. Yeah. I watched women in the Middle East. There were five different women from five different countries. None of them were allowed. They didn't know each other, but they met, and there was this interesting TV connection, like a Zoom kind of thing. And they were talking about driving. None of them were allowed to drive. So because of their relationship, they all went out and started driving. And then I heard later that they were out flying jets, for heaven's sakes, and they were speed racing, you know, but they had incited one another from places they'd never actually met. And I always like that as a great story of, you know, what can happen, a connection, recognizing how common it is. Yeah.
You know, the internet is a very powerful tool, and we're talking about expansion, so it can really help you to expand because you get exposed to a lot of other views and ways of life. But, you know, the most important thing is what are you being exposed to? What are you getting involved with? That's probably what's the most important.
But I think when you're young and messed up, as I said, you don't really think that through quite with the same finesse on your own behalf, maybe. That's where the danger is. But we don't need to go into that right now.
I don't think you're supposed to.
Yeah.
I don't think you're supposed to do it with finesse. I think you'll do it with finesse when you're ready to.
Okay.
you know, you have a very big bag of tricks or things or building blocks that you can dip your hand in. And, you know, it's like a really big black bag, and the opening is only big enough for just your hand to go in, and you don't know what's in there. There could be poisonous snakes, building blocks, Lego, anything. It could be a beautiful orchid. You got to dip your hand in and grab it. As your consciousness changes, so the neck of the bag opens and you get to see clearly what it is you're choosing until the point where the bag is not necessary. You know, that's how consciousness unfolds. So
I like that. That's a wonderful metaphor, actually. I enjoy that a lot. So a lot of it comes through your feeling and so on. So tell people, we're almost done here already, but... Do you have anything that you'd like to say about the workshops that are coming up or any other points you'd like to give listeners? Well, maybe even a little exercise. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, if people would like to be inspired to take their, not only the yoga practice, but their understanding of themselves and life to a whole new level, and obviously to take their relationship between the parents and the children to a whole new level, then this is the opportunity that we're offering.
Well, Paul, do you do it online as well?
We do programs online together.
But not these are not online.
No, these aren't online. And what I would suggest as an exercise for everyone who's listening is to take 5 minutes or 10 minutes out every day just to sit and be peaceful and to allow whatever to bubble up within them so that they can feel and sense a deeper connection with something beyond what they see in the mirror, beyond the voices they hear in their head, just to take that time to explore something deeper within themselves and to create a connection there, I think would be of benefit to everyone.
That's a wonderful idea. That's a very good idea. Well, I thank you both. Go ahead.
I have a question for you, Veronica.
Oh, good.
So we're on our way. We're there next week. Do we get to have a hug and see you?
You bet. I'll be right there. When are you coming?
Mid next week, as far as I know. I think the 3rd or the 4th, somewhere around
there.
That's
right, the 3rd. Yes, you bet. We'll see you on the 3rd or the 4th,
so
or something like that.
I'll give you a really big hug from across the ocean in 1 week's time.
I'm looking forward to seeing both of you. Thank you so much for being paradigm shifters, because this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. All right. That's Paul and Jay Lee Balsh. And if people wanted to get hold of you, do you have a website or just give your email? What would you like to give people today?
We have two. So I'll give you the one which is mine, which people can contact us through. The other one is the portal, like a university that we use with all our work. So www.jayleebalsh.com. And you'll find a way to reach us there.
Good. Well, I thank you so much. Thank you. Many blessings. See you next week.
Okay. Look forward to it. Take care.
Me too. Thank you.
And love to Bob.
Okay. Bye.